Cold feel, 9 degrees in Newcastle, 11 in Cardiff and Belfast and 10 in Aberdeen. Through Friday night, most of the showers will fade, then it'll turn cold and it's going to be a distinctly cold weekend with a mix of sunshine and showers. Well, that's all for now. It's back to you, Luke.
Ben, thank you. Now on Radio 4, we continue our series of very personal insights and opinions about the turbulent world of Italian politics, culture and society with the fourth of our Letters from Italy. Today's correspondent is one of Italy's most established and celebrated writers, the novelist and playwright Dacia Maraini.
Lettera dall'Italia.
Lettera dall'Italia.
We are on the terrace of my house in Rome, in the center of Rome, near the Vatican. I can see wonderful dome, but unfortunately the Vatican has had a great weight on our history, and not a good one sometimes. I am a writer. My name is Dacia Maraini. I'm of a family of writers, by the way. My grandmother was English, and she was a writer. And my grandmother was also a writer, Cornelia Berkeley. She wrote books for children. So there is a tradition, a specifically female line of writers in the family of my father. When I was invited to write this letter, I said, well, this is a good occasion to explain a little more in detail, because I think we know very little of each other. And believe me, in Italy there is a lot to know. I wanted to be clear in the details, so I write it in Italian. And I asked my friend and my translator, Sharon Wood. She lives in Leicester. She teaches there at the university, to help me with the translation. Andiamo. Many things have happened in Italy in the last few weeks and months. The election result, the new Pope, who refers to St. Francis, which means return to poverty and imitation of Christ. That's not a small thing. The constant threat of the economic meltdown. But I would like to start with something else, detailed amongst the headlines. A courageous woman had been elected president of the Italian Chamber of Deputies, a woman outside traditional politics who is more used to working with the world's poor, and a man of integrity who has devoted himself to the struggle against the mafia has been elected to the Senate. A part of me craves to see these events as a symptom of real change. This happens all too regularly in Italy. Just as the country is about to plunge into the abyss, it grabs on by its fingernails and pulls itself back from the edge. That's why the election of Laura Boldrini in the Chamber of Deputies and Pietro Grasso in the Senate gives me, and this difficult, contradictory, and unpredictable country, some hope for the future. It may be that my capacity to feel both indignation and hope comes from my mixed ancestry. All my grandparents were from different countries. Joy Cross was from England, Antonio Maraini from Switzerland, Sonia Ortusa from Chile, and Enrico Aliata from Sicily. Or maybe my sense of justice is innate. I don't know. I do know that ever since I was a child, I felt the powerful sense of indignation when faced with injustice, wherever it comes from and whoever suffers as a result. I still remember running away from my home at the age of 5 because my father had punished me unfairly. My parents searched frantically for me everywhere, and finally found me sitting on a table in a police station in Tokyo. I was busy entertaining the young policeman with my made-up stories. I should explain that I lived in Japan for 8 years. My anthropologist father was fascinated by Japanese culture, and I ate and dressed exactly like a little Japanese girl. We spent two of those years imprisoned in a concentration camp for anti-fascist. It was an experience that left me with a vivid imagination and an inability to throw away a piece of bread. Many of the battles which over the years have found expression in my novels and my theater were the result of my indignation in the face of injustice. Along this path, I have found myself side by side with many others just as indignant as me, even if they weren't able to make their voice heard. During my annual encounters with American university students, I'm often asked about Italy and what is going on here. I have to say I find it a difficult question, partly because Italian politics is so complex, and partly because what we see in the media doesn't correspond to the real heart of the country, and partly also because we have to admit that often the vote, which should be an expression of personal freedom, reveals a surprising submissiveness to the conformity imposed by the television. Why do so many of the poor show public support for an enormously rich man who has demonstrated his ability to enrich himself, but not the country he professed to love? A man who has given us proof that he has no qualms in promoting his own business affairs to the detriment of the collective purse. The only possible answer is ignorance, since it's impossible to believe that people are incapable of forming a judgment, we must conclude that they are ill-informed. Why? I would say precisely because for 20 years now, control of the most widespread means of mass communication amongst Italian families has been in the hands of a single man, and nobody has been able to stop him.
Dimmi il bello, perché? Beh, io non so, quando è successo a me, sono tornata a casa e...
You may be getting the impression that I am not Silvio Berlusconi's biggest fan. You would be right. And I have to acknowledge that there remain millions who defend his every move and every statement. But today, I have the pen. In accordance with the value system imparted by the television stations, those who prize generosity and solidarity have been contemptuously dispatched as do-gooders, weak losers. Any sense of community has been labeled communist, the plague of humanity. Honesty is judged fit only for the naive. Knowledge and understanding are the province of dull, ancient professors. Every law which seeks to curtail our actions, every rule held in common, is declared to be nothing more than an obstacle to individual free will. This is a great danger because young people start to think that they have to be astute, they have to lie, they have to fight just to become winners, to win against the others. This was an Italy in which wealth was a sign of intelligence and ability, unscrupulous use of the law a sign of strength and power, contempt for the weak nothing less than political shrewdness, and contempt for women a sign of virility. Well, chopping carrots is relaxing for me, specifically when I'm angry, because, you know, this mentality of the winner, of being strong, of being rich at any cost, is something terrible for women. You know that in Italy we have every year 120, 130 women who are killed by their own partners. This is new, it's something absolutely terrible also. They are originally a couple of young people, they love each other. Then at a certain moment she says, I go away, the love is dead, and he kills her. Because, just because she wants to have an independence, a freedom. It comes from a culture in which love means possession. You see, a man says, I love her, so she's mine. You know? And if she wants to go away, something breaks. But very often, even the group of women, which were very active before, the feminist, for example, movement, is without words. They are sleeping. We are sleeping. I mean, there is a sort of acceptance of this situation. It is as we were Sleeping Beauties. It's a sort of magic sleeping. And she's waiting for the kiss of a wonderful prince. But naturally, this is a symbolical fairy tale. It would be not a charming prince, but it would be the indignation, rage of the young people, of the also the old people. There are lots of old people who are angry, furious, because we have reached the bottom. If Italy is divided, we could say that there is an Italy who is really want to change. And there is another Italy who doesn't want to change, or are afraid to change, or they believe so much through the television that they think that there's no problem. But I must get back to my letter. A group of intellectuals known as Girotondi were widely applauded when they formed the human chain around the Italian television center. And who could have foreseen the success of a women's association calling themselves Se non ora, quando? If not now, when? Who successfully brought thousands of people out into Italian squares to protest? What we see here is the birth and development of an ever-widening resistance which publicly express its unease, its anger, and its rage. In the political sphere, a new movement has come into being, led by a charismatic demagogue who has cleverly gathered all this discontent and turned it into votes. Beppe Grillo had the intelligence to say publicly that the political system is decrepit and petrified. And yet I feel uneasy as it settles in Parliament, only to be paralyzed by the need to take decisions, to plan, to do that thing which appears so challenging in Italy, to govern. So where does that leave that little child who fought so fiercely against injustice? Who hung on passionately to the childhood belief in happy endings? I don't know if it would be right to say that Sleeping Beauty has awoken. I hope so. I want to think so. Above all, I want to go on believing that we were sleeping and that we can be beautiful in what we are and what we choose to be and do. We need to recover our trust in the future, not only in terms of deficit and money markets, but in our desire to live together with courage and joy.
Letter from Italy was written and presented by Dacia Maraini. The producer was Tom Alban. And tomorrow, the final letter in the series comes from the journalist Annalisa Piras. And you can find more information about all five contributors to the series on the Radio 4 website.